The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Derek Frost from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Triangle Business Journal. And we start on the front page of the Triangle Business Journal with the special report headline, Fast 50 Awards, recognizing the Triangle's fastest-growing private companies in 2018. And we'll read about three of the entries on the list. One, Mako Medical Laboratories, location Raleigh. Business description, medical laboratory. Number of employees, 502. Top Triangle executive entitled, Chad Price, founder and president. What is fueling your company's growth? Passion for making an impact. Every action, step, and decision we make is focused on making an impact in other people's lives. Our pursuit to support more nonprofits, charities, missionaries, and hire more veterans is fueling our team and our aggressive growth. The market is ready for disruption. Patients and providers want more options. What is your biggest success in the past 12 months? The completion of our new blood genetics and microbiology lab in Henderson. This expanded our test menu by 3,100 different tests and has allowed us to expand our customer base. Also, launching new markets in Georgia and West Virginia, developing a new nutritional DNA test for the European markets, and forming new strategic partnerships. What are your biggest concerns looking ahead? The unknown path of healthcare. Lots of consolidation, pricing changes, disruptive technologies. The goal is to stay ahead of the changes and be proactive. What are your company's chief goals in 2019? Expand our footprint into two new states, begin offering new patented tests and forming new partnerships for distribution, and develop new technology that makes it easier for patients and practices to use services. How many employees do you plan to hire in the next 12 months? At our current rate, we should add more than 200 new employees. What is the best aspect of owning a business in the Triangle? It's competitive. Competition makes you better. There's lots of talent in this market, plus you have the ability to collaborate with larger companies that are headquartered here. 2. Tiger Swan. Location, Apex. Business description, global risk management. Number of employees, 100. Top Triangle executive entitled, Jim Reese, founder and CEO. What is fueling your company's growth? A recent survey showed that 40% of CEOs across the globe listed geopolitical uncertainty as a top business risk. Our company was built on the promise to provide solutions to uncertainty. The complexities created from global growth have generated opportunities for our company to help organizations navigate the risk landscape and provide solutions to enable them to safely seize opportunity. What is your biggest success in the past 12 months? The past 12 months were very productive. The results of our team led to many big successes, equal in importance, achieving international ISO PSC 0.1 certification, winning a contract award for services across Africa, supporting NC emergency management through Hurricane Florence, and growing a technology development capability in-house. What are your biggest concerns looking ahead? For our market, the growth of economic espionage is concerning and is something that impacts all of us. The attributes that are attracting so many great businesses and new technologies are also attracting bad actors. What are your company's chief goals in 2019? From day one, our operating mantra has been brilliance in the basics. Our main goal for 2019, after 10 years of significant growth, will be to maintain our strong foundation and excel in the basics of our service delivery. Secondary to that, growing the technology side of our business will be a primary goal for 2019. How many employees do you plan to hire in the next 12 months? No projections yet. What is the best aspect of owning a business in the Triangle? The diversity of ideas and capabilities in the Triangle is a great characteristic and makes owning a business here valuable. Within a 60-minute drive are corporate executives leading the world, university leaders changing the world, and special operations commanders securing the world. It's an amazing diversity of ideas and capabilities that are located in this market and fueling its growth, and it makes hiring a dream when you can recruit from this pool of talent. Number 3 on the list, Terramore Homes. Location, Raleigh. Business description, home builder. Number of employees, 55. Top Triangle executive and title, Pablo Reeder, CEO. What is fueling your company's growth? We build in some of the best neighborhoods where people want to raise their families. Also, a new collection of home designs meets the new trends of today's buyers. And our reputation as a quality builder is desired by customers and realtors in the Triangle. What is your biggest success in the past 12 months? Our focus over the last 12 months has been on employee development, retention, and overall teamwork. Our team created the Together campaign to emphasize the importance of relying on your teammates to achieve operational excellence. What are your biggest concerns looking ahead? Our biggest concern is that the leaders of the towns and cities that we build in plan properly for the growth the Triangle is experiencing. Balancing the need for new homes, schools, traffic, and jobs is paramount. What are your company's chief goals in 2019? Our goal is to build the homes where 300 new families will create their memories and dreams. How many employees do you plan to hire in the next next 12 months? 5. What is the best aspect of owning a business in the Triangle? The Triangle's growth is fueling ours. The Triangle has become such a dynamic and well-planned employment center with great job opportunities and a diverse and well-educated population. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to Biz, a quick glance at Triangle happenings, written by managing editor Dane Huffman. Two Raleigh brewery owners are literally married to their work. Carly and Nick Barango met in college at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh, where Nick Brango, B-R-A-N-G-O, developed a fascination with brewing beer after getting a home brew kit from his father for Christmas. After school, they moved to Raleigh for warmer weather and opened Fun Guys Brewing in April. Like any small business owners, they were working at the shop all the time, with Nick brewing beer in the back and Carly tending bar up front. So when they got married on October 6th, they said their vows in front of family and friends at the bar. "It is our livelihood, our combined passion and dream," Carly tells Biz. "We spend pretty much all hours of our days here, so why not make Fun Guys the center of the most special day of our lives?" And rather than having champagne, they created a special beer for the wedding, a sour ghost ale made with muscatine grape juice. After that, there was no honeymoon, but back to work. No fun there, but hey, sounds like a great wedding. This company leader takes flight for kids. Costs associated with medical treatments can be destructive for families, and so can travel to and from specialty hospitals. Luckily for one Triangle girl, the transportation costs got much cheaper. Recently, local nonprofit Children's Flight of Hope recognized Ray Hales, president of the Hales Company in Clayton, for flying 14-year-old Melody Davidson to and from Pittsburgh 14 times in the course of the last year and a half. Hales, at no cost to her family, flies his plane every 4 to 6 weeks so she can be treated for an aggressive, inoperable brain tumor. Before Hales and Children's Flight of Hope stepped in, Davidson's family could not afford the travel for the care they needed. Hales says he got involved in the organization after his own daughter was diagnosed with cancer, and he realized the burden that transporting her to care could be, even when it was less than an hour away. Hale says the experience made him start thinking about how he could help families with more difficult decisions. "I've been very fortunate in my life that I can afford to do something like this," Hale says. "I'm more than happy to foot the bill and make these flights. It's very rewarding for me to know that we can help out." He says the children's flight deserves support and considers his contribution a very, very small part of the good that it does. This time, a New York firm is betting on chicken and biscuits. The Jordan Company, a New York investment firm, is making another bet on North Carolina. The firm made headlines November 6 when it, along with Durational Capital, announced it was buying Bojangles, a North Carolina homegrown biscuit brand. It's a big deviation from another bet it made in the state a few years back on a small Raleigh metering company called Census. The Jordan Company, in partnership with the private equity arm of Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated, acquired Census in 2003 for about $650 million. In 2016, the company was acquired by water technology company Xylem for a whopping $1.7 billion in cash. And the exit proved good news for the Triangle 2, as Xylem recently announced plans to expand its census operation into a Durham headquarters. Despite its problems, Lowe's heads to Holly Springs. Lowe's company's growth numbers are heading in the opposite direction of Holly Springs, which could be why the company is opening a new store in the fast-growing suburban town. Earlier this month, the home improvement chain announced it would be closing 51 locations across the U.S. and Canada, but that hasn't stopped the company from moving forward with plans for a new 90,000-square-foot store at the intersection of NC 55 and Ralph Stevens Road. The town council has backed a master plan for the development, and Lowe's officials say they plan to finalize plans over the next month. Perhaps the company is hoping that Holly Springs' growth will help reverse its fortunes. The town's population has grown from 24,000 people in 2010 to more than 35,000 last year, according to the U.S. Census Bureau. Raleigh Leader passes along centuries of advice. The H.J. Brown Coffin House opened in Raleigh in 1836 and still stands as Brownwin Funeral Home, the oldest company in Raleigh. So biz perked up recently when Robert Bob Wynn III was named to the Distinguished Class of 2018 for the Raleigh Hall of Fame. Going strong after 182 years? Wow. So biz asked him for lessons he had learned along the way. One of the most important tenets is to hire the best people you can find, says Wynn, the fifth generation of his family to work in the business. If that means paying them more and keeping benefits strong, that's something I always did. I was always on the lookout for the best people, the best staff. And innovation is key. The company made early moves into cremation services and pre-planning for funerals. And despite its Inside the Beltline roots, Wynn was also looking for new opportunities. He bought land in Cary when the population was 6,900. And, quote, it seemed like it was out in the middle of nowhere. And I went to North Raleigh when there was hardly anything and found some land on Millbrook Road in a pine forest, unquote. And whether it's 1836 or 2018, a personal touch matters. He still calls families a few weeks later to check in. Wynn appreciated that 23 staff members from Brown Wynn came to the induction after the ceremony he celebrated with, of course, a milkshake at the Char Grill. And finally, in a section called By the Numbers, Downtown Raleigh explodes. How hot is downtown Raleigh? New numbers from the Downtown Raleigh Alliance give a glimpse. $305 million. Total number of completed projects this year, the most since $343 million in 2013. 17 street-level businesses opened in the third quarter. 994 residential units rising. 7.8 percentage of office vacancy in the third quarter, which is down from 11.4% at the start of 2017. 8,700, the DRA estimate for the downtown population. And now we turn to On Finance, Tech, and Transportation, written by Lauren Onosorge. Economists debate economic path. The chance of a recession in 2019? Close to 100%, said Mark Yusko, the oft-quoted managing director and chief investment officer of Chapel Hill's Morgan Creek Capital. Yusko, according to Financial Advisor magazine, made the remarks at the 9th Inside Alternatives and Asset Allocation Conference in Las Vegas recently, alongside Dennis Gartman, the NC State University alum currently editing the Gartman Letter. Gartman estimated the chance of a recession in 2019 at 50%. But is a recession really ahead? Here's what the economists are saying. I would take the opposite on that, says Mark Vittner, managing director and senior economist at Wells Fargo. We do not see any of the difficult precursors of a recession. The economy seems to be growing fairly solidly, and North Carolina is growing faster than the nation. We put it around, probably about 1 in 4 or 1 in 5, says Bill Adams, senior economist at PNC. A recession being in the next year seems unlikely, and the reason we have that viewpoint is that the forward-looking economic indicators like small business sentiment, large business sentiment, and consumer sentiment are strong. Much will depend on what the Fed does, says Mike Walden, economist and professor at NC State University. Still, come June 2019, the current economic expansion will be the longest in our nation's history, so it is natural to be concerned about a pause. Hence, when I speak to business audiences today, I tell them that they should have a plan for navigating a recession in the back pocket. Precision Hawk by Chicago Drone Company to add heft. With the buy of a Chicago-based Uplift Data Partners, Raleigh drone developer Precision Hawk has made its fifth acquisition of 2018. To me, we're really starting to see the drone market take off, Precision Hawk CEO Michael Chasen says. He says Precision Hawk's strategy has been about market opportunity, one sector at a time. For drones, the opportunity now is in four areas, he says: agriculture, insurance, energy, and construction. When market demand appears, Precision Hawk goes hunting, Chasen explains. In September, Precision Hawk acquired both Hazon and Inspect Tools, two companies that specialize in the energy industry. Uplift, which already has a competitive presence in the agriculture and insurance sectors, rounds out the list. Uplift specializes in inspection services for construction and facilities management. Founded in 2015 as a subsidiary for construction giant Clayco, the company makes sense for Precision Hawk's portfolio, Chasen says, and it comes with a large client base that makes Precision Hawk an instant player in the space. Through its recent buys, Chasen estimates Precision Hawk as number one in energy, renewable energy and construction, and facilities when it comes to drones. And more could be coming. We're always keeping an eye on what's happening in the industry, he says. Boston firm plans to make hires in Durham. A Boston cloud storage company that counts firms such as Nutanix and Red Hat as partners has opened a hub in downtown Durham, one that could eventually house more than 100 employees. Scott Dussault, chief operating officer and chief financial officer of Nasuni, says the company currently has 12 employees in North Carolina. That could soon change. We've got really ambitious goals for growth, he says, and not just in Boston. The firm already planned to grow its 80-person engineering team by 60%. Its new office in the Triangle opens up a new talent pool, Dussault says. We've begun aggressively recruiting in Raleigh-Durham, he says, noting he plans to definitely double locally in the next year. RDU debuts six new flights in November. Six new nonstop flights debut in the month of November at Raleigh-Durham International Airport, and the ground handler responsible for serving the planes is ready for the influx. CEO Byron Oliver of Charter Express, which is Frontier Airlines' contracted ground handler, says the new flights have translated into jobs in the Triangle. We have been hiring for the last month, month and a half, he says. It's been going great. Charter, which also serves Allegiant, Alaska, and JetBlue at RDU, is now at 94 employees, he said. The nonstop Frontier flights debuting in November: Cancun, Mexico, November 15. Phoenix, Arizona, November 15. West Palm Beach, Florida, November 15. Punta Cana, Dominican Republic, November 16. Montego Bay, Jamaica, November 17. And Fort Myers, Florida, November 17. And more are coming. On December 15, for example, Allegiant's nonstop flight to Puerto Rico is set to debut. $34 billion IBM Red Hat deal may have changed the narrative. When IBM announced its $34 billion deal for Raleigh's Red Hat, CEOs at other firms couldn't help but mention the buy on earnings calls. I thought Watson was what they're going to lead with. Sounds like they're going to lead with open source, so we're going to have an opportunity on analytics. And that quote is from Mark Barrancia, CEO of Canadian enterprise information management software company OpenText. When two of our key partners join forces, it creates meaningful opportunity and momentum for us. And that's from Jeff Davis, CEO of St. Louis-based technology consulting firm Perficient. Now we turn to On Real Estate, written by Ben Graham. Real Estate Report offers pause to firms looking for space. The latest reports on the state of the Triangle's office market differ in their exact numbers, but the broader themes show that recent trends are holding strong. Vacancy remains low, while rents are heading in the opposite direction. Triangle-wide commercial real estate analysts report that average Class A office rents reached between $26 and $28 per square foot in the third quarter. In the downtowns of Raleigh and Durham, average Class A office rents are more than $30 per square foot, and in some cases well above that threshold depending on the report. Those numbers are poised to rise. Projects currently under construction in downtown Raleigh have an average asking rate of more than $35 per square foot, according to CBRE. In Raleigh's North Hills neighborhood, Colliers International Vice President Thomas Kenna projects office lease rates to break $40 per square foot in 2019. While some submarkets saw decreases from the second quarter to the third, the year-over-year trend is upward, according to analyses from CBRE, Colliers International, and JLL. Real estate analysts attribute the rising rates to a variety of factors, from sustained demand to the rising cost of building. Cost of construction and development are finally catching up to rental rates, with continued new-to-market and new-to-North Carolina tenant demand further increasing rate hikes, Kenna writes in an email. But brokers don't view the rising lease rate as being prohibitive to tenants, at least not to credit tenants and out-of-town companies looking for space. The reason, they say, is that the Triangle office rates represent a steep savings compared to other markets, places such as Boston and San Francisco. Meanwhile, vacancy remains low. CBRE found Class A vacancy across the region to be below 8% for the quarter, down from more than 13% as recently as early 2017. In central Durham, Class A office vacancy has maintained a vacancy rate of less than 2% for four consecutive quarters, according to CBRE. Driving demand are technology firms and co-working companies looking to capitalize on millennial talent in the region, CBRE's report states. Co-working giants WeWork and Spaces have leased more than 30,000 square feet of space in the Triangle since the beginning of 2017. WeWork starts filling new tower. WeWork's first Triangle location was bustling with activity on a recent afternoon, just 2 weeks after the co-working space opened on the fourth and fifth floors of Durham's new One City Center tower. Part of that was due to the preparations for the launch party to take place that night, but the 58,000 square foot shared office space has also begun to fill out with people doing work, startup companies scribbling business plans on whiteboards in glass-walled offices, and freelancers sitting on low-slung couches tapping away at laptops. WeWork Southeast General Manager Bobby Condon wouldn't provide details on how much the 1,200 desk space is filling up, except to say more room will be needed in the near future. "We're leasing very quickly," he said. "We're going to need a second space soon." Part of the appeal is that WeWork is providing a variety of office types and tenant packages to accommodate a broad mix of companies, Condon says. The largest office can house 188 workers and has sweeping views of downtown Durham. Single desks are also for rent, starting at $375 per month. Private offices line the exterior of the building with rooms sectioned off for a variety of business functions. There are conference rooms with large flat-screen televisions, rooms decked out only with whiteboards for brainstorming, and lounge rooms with comfy couches for a more relaxed business meeting. "This is really a space for everybody," he says. WeWork also has an 81,000-square-foot lease signed in the One Glenwood Tower in Raleigh. Real estate sources say WeWork has been working on a deal for space at the Durham Innovation District, or Durham ID. Two buildings are currently being built there by Longfellow Real Estate Partners. The company is joining a crowded market. A competitor called Spaces, under the International Workplace Group PLC umbrellas, that also owns Regus, opened in the Dillon Tower in downtown Raleigh this summer and has plans for another office in the 555 Mangum building in Durham, in addition to other planned locations near Crabtree Valley Mall and in Chapel Hill and Cary. Holly Springs growth continues as firm plans distribution hub. A building materials wholesaler is working on plans to build a new distribution hub that would service the company's Raleigh locations. Ferguson Enterprises plans to construct a 100,000-square-foot shipping center in Holly Springs, according to a third-quarter earnings call. While the executives on the call didn't discuss the specific location, the company recently acquired nearly 19 acres along Green Oaks Parkway, about 2 miles west of downtown Holly Springs. The company bought the land from two different owners for a combined $1.99 million, according to county records. A new distribution center would be yet another boon for this corner of Holly Springs. Sequoias has been working on a $9 million facility expansion at its nearby campus, breaking ground in December on a new 15,000-square-foot warehouse to support more manufacturing capacity. The larger campus currently employs 550 full-time employees and 150 contract workers. More senior apartments to be added. Developers behind a long-planned tower of senior living apartments at North Hills are upping the building's height, an increase they say is driven by sustained demand for continuing care retirement housing. When the Cardinal at North Hills announced plans for the building last spring, they said it would rise 15 stories and have 160 new residences. But now, with a certificate of need approval from the state in hand, the company plans an 18-story tower with 192 units. While those numbers could change, Executive Director Tom Ford says the project will be larger because of the rising demand his team has seen for senior housing, particularly in urban areas that provide a variety of amenities such as North Hills. The Cardinal, which currently has 160 independent living apartments and another 60 units at its more intensive healthcare center, first opened in January 2017 and is now 100% occupied with a pretty extensive waiting list, Ford says. Now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to On Healthcare and Education, written by Seth Gulledge. BioAgilytics sells to Belgian entity. It did not take long for fast-growing BioAgilytics to be acquired. COBEPA, spelled C-O-B-E-P-A, a Belgian investment firm, is buying the Durham company. As with any buyout, BioAgilytics CEO Jim Dayton put his optimistic hat on and declared the company will experience even more rapid growth, including some buyouts of its own. Financial terms of the deal have not been disclosed. According to Dayton, COBEPA has been tracking the company for several years, though BioAgilytics began considering strategic alternatives in the second quarter. He says the firm has been looking to become involved in their industry, and they believe BioAgilytics is a business ripe for continued expansion. In our industry, there's a big transition, he says, a continued trend in outsourcing from pharma and biotech companies looking to find companies like ours to do the work for them, at a better quality, more cost-effective, and more reliable. He says between the shift toward outsourcing and a focus on large-scale molecule production, he believes there is plenty of untapped potential left for the company. BioAgilytics is set to report close to $60 million in revenue this year, and Dayton says he expects $100 million in revenue next year. In addition, the company has hired more than 100 new employees year to date and plans to hire about 140 more in the next year. In September, the company announced the expansion of its headquarters, expanding to 69,000 square feet. The year before, the company expanded its laboratory's cell culture facility by adding 21,000 square feet to the Durham location, while also hiring an additional 60 employees in its U.S. facilities. Internationally, Dayton says they plan to expand into several new markets in Europe and Asia through acquisitions. In the near future, the company is planning several executive hires to expand their team, including a chief information officer, senior marketing executive, and a head of corporate development, among others. We're thrilled that we now have a very supportive investor in COBEPA who says, hey, invest more in the company, in the facilities, and the people here. He says, from our perspective, it's full steam ahead. Curtis Media founder gifts $21 million to UNC. Thanks to a historic donation, the UNC Chapel Hill School of Media and Journalism will build an $8 million state-of-the-art media center for its students, and that's less than half the gift. UNC Chapel Hill recently announced a $21.2 million gift from Don Curtis and his wife Barbara through their foundation, the Curtis Foundation. A total of $10 million is going to the journalism school. Another $3 million will go to the UNC School of Medicine and UNC Hospital, $3 million to the UNC Athletics Department, and $5.2 million for undetermined ventures at the school. Curtis owns Raleigh's Curtis Media Group and is a 1963 UNC alumnus. He says he does not want people to focus on his gift alone. He referenced advice he received from someone responsible from a scholarship he received in high school, who told him to appreciate the English teacher who pushed him toward the scholarship, not the man who merely funded it. He says, "I gave you a little bit of money, and I have plenty of it, and I'm not going to miss it, but she gave you her time, and she doesn't have any more of it than I do, so thank her," Curtis says. "I had two life-changing experiences that day. I knew I wanted to make a life-changing donation at some point in my life, and second, I wanted to never forget that money is just part of the equation. The rest is everyone who gives their time." By the numbers, here are the largest gifts to UNC Chapel Hill, according to UNC. Fred Eshelman, $100 million, 2014. Dennis and Joan Gillings, $50 million, 2007. John L. and Marie Townsend, $50 million, 2017. Steve and Debbie Vetter, $40 million, 2017. Sheldon and Lena Peck, $25 million, 2017. NC Hospital finds ways to cut costs, save $43 million per year. The North Carolina Cancer Hospital is saving $43 million per year, all because it asked a question. The hospital, working with the UNC Department of Pharmacy, was recognized by the Association of Community Cancer Centers Innovator Awards for reducing drug waste. Lindsay Amerine, Associate Director of Pharmacy at the UNC Medical Center, says they have reduced drug waste by simply not throwing away as many drugs. She says accepted policy has been that the drug vials must be thrown away after 6 hours of being opened. She says in 2011, they tested that theory and discovered the drugs were not at risk until about 7 days. Since launching their drug vial optimization program, they have saved about $43 million per year. Amerine says total medication costs in hospitals and clinics have increased by 49%, $65.7 billion to $98.2 billion from 2011 to 2016. Drug waste from the use of single-dose vials for oncology and infusion agents is estimated to cost $1.8 billion annually. Amerine says the reason is because the hospital already uses a closed system for extracting the drugs to protect clinicians. Thus, the risk of contamination generally associated with a needle and vial system are drastically less. She says other hospitals have been slower to follow suit because each environment must be extensively tested for risk of contamination before adopting a policy. And in a section called Remembered, healthcare leader set high standards. Dr. Gary Greenberg is being remembered for pushing for quality care for the underprivileged. Greenberg, who died October 17 from leukemia, had been the medical director of Urban Ministries Open Door Clinic in Raleigh, which served the uninsured and underprivileged. In 2018, Triangle Business Journal gave him its Healthcare Heroes Lifetime Achievement Award. Gary Care was known for rigorous, high-quality care, and the clinic said the standards were written not only from Gary's amazing medical mind, but from his huge, caring heart and the depth of his soul. And finally, Liquidia focuses on its drug pipeline. Following its initial public offering this summer, Liquidia Technologies is buckling down in preparation for its new drug application next year. Revenue for the quarter was reported at just $200,000, a $1.6 million drop compared to the previous year. Net loss for the quarter totaled $9.7 million, down significantly from the 2017 third quarter loss of $19.2 million. Liquidia's primary source of revenue is its PRINT technology, a particle engineering platform that it sells to other pharmaceutical developers. CEO Neil Fowler says the drop in revenue was mostly related to the company's strategy of refocusing resources to the internal development of their pipeline, as opposed to working with other companies. Liquidia's president and CFO, Kevin Gordon, says they are still interested in working with other companies, but only in more substantial ways. In July, the company completed its IPO, receiving $49.4 million in net proceeds from selling 4.8 million shares of common stock. It reported $47.5 million cash on hand. Currently, the company has two candidates, LIQ865 and LIQ861. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to A Better World, a look at the philanthropic ecosystem in the greater Raleigh-Durham region. And the first article on the page, written by Seth Gulledge, Foundations Lay Out Strategies to Life Sciences Investing. Eight national nonprofit foundations stood on a Triangle stage recently to explain what they like to invest in and to hear what ideas the standing room only crowd of life sciences entrepreneurs and business leaders had. The hope is that between their money and ideas, real progress can be made in advancing cures. Launch Bio, the nonprofit arm of BioLabs, partnered with the North Carolina Biotechnology Center to host Invest in Cures on November 1, a forum that brought representatives from the National Nonprofit Disease Foundations to discuss their company philosophies as well as explain their funding and deal mechanisms. Joan Rose, Launch Bio CEO and organizer of the event, says the idea was to let Triangle companies ask representatives of these foundations exactly what they were looking for as well as if they might be looking for them. Preceding the three-hour forum at the Biotechnology Center, one-on-one pitch meetings between the foundations and companies were organized. According to Rose, the eight foundations accepted 30 different meetings with companies. We are interested in new sources of capital for early-stage life sciences companies and see non-traditional investors such as these foundations as an important addition to the network, Rose said. The forum itself was packed as the audience competed for opportunities to hear exactly what brings out the checkbooks from these foundations. Chris Penland, Vice President of Biopharma Organizations for the Cystic Fibrosis Foundation, said companies obviously should target foundations that have a named interest in their disease their candidates target. Beyond that, he said, bring us novelty, go after targets that are of higher value to us as a foundation, and I think the door will be open for a discussion. Deborah Miller, President and CEO of Cure Duchenne Ventures, said she was particularly interested in companies that presented a thought-out strategy her venture fund could get into quickly. We're very narrow with our disease focus, but what we're looking for are next-generation therapies right now, she said, mentioning her experience with Triangle-based Bamboo Therapeutics. What attracted me to those opportunities, they were just fast. They knew what they wanted to do. We knew what we wanted to do. Mark Allegretta, Vice President of Commercial Research for the National Multiple Sclerosis Society, said they are less worried about the overall investment and more about results. We need to address every possible opportunity that we can, he says. The investment component is at best secondary to us at best, perhaps tertiary. We're really looking at the investment from the perspective of saying, wouldn't it be great if this worked out for everyone and we can all celebrate with a back-end return? And in a section called Through Our Eyes, Project gives insight into lives of the homeless in Raleigh. A recent project in Raleigh highlighted the challenges of those facing homelessness in the Through Our Eyes project. The project gave cameras to 107 people who were homeless so they could document their lives for a week. A sampling of the photos were displayed at the Contemporary Art Museum in Raleigh with a celebration of the event held November 4 to raise funds for three organizations who serve that population. Tyler Cunningham led the project, modeled on one in Spartanburg, South Carolina in 2016. I wanted to bring that project to our community and use the messages of hope, resilience, and faith to build awareness for our neighbors struggling with homelessness, Cunningham says. And finally, in the nonprofit world section, Salvation Army to begin holiday push. The Red Kettles are coming. The Salvation Army of Wake County kicks off its Red Kettle campaign on November 9 at locations around the Triangle. Also November 9, Angel Tree Giving begins at Crabtree Valley Mall, Triangle Town Center, and Cary Town Center, and volunteers are needed. And if you want to register for the Christmas Cheer Program, the Salvation Army has added an additional registration day on November 15 from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at Cary Town Center in the old Sears building. Wilson Foundation spends $22 million for after-school programs. Thanks to a $22 million gift, hundreds of kids in Wilson County will be able to enjoy a new after-school program. Last week, Healthcare Foundation of Wilson announced the gift to establish an after-school location, including several locations, transportation, and funds for activities and programming. The City of Wilson plans to provide a centrally located, easily accessible site for the program's future home, and Wilson Family YMCA will manage the program. WellCare partners with YMCAs. WellCare North Carolina is partnering with state YMCAs to improve healthy living across the region. The organization recently announced a $250,000 commitment to the North Carolina Alliance of YMCAs to support in-house programs that focus on youth development, healthy living, and social responsibility. Supported activities through the funding include YMCA's after-school programming, summer camp for children with disabilities, the YMCA Diabetes Prevention Program, and the Togetherhood Program. Roe invests again in Durham Public Schools. Chapel Hill-based Roe has donated another $30,000 to the highest poverty schools in Durham. The company has donated more than $137,000 to public education over 4 years. The donations were allocated through DonorsChoose.org, a service that allows teachers to request funds based on individual classroom needs. Roe donated funds to the lowest income schools in Durham County. And now in the Triangle Business Journal, we turn to the Viewpoint page to read the editor's notebook, written by Sugata Mukherjee, editor of the Triangle Business Journal. The headline, Raleigh makes wrong call on electric scooter fees. In tennis, there is a term used quite often when a player loses a point because of a mistake that was avoidable. It's called an unforced error. The Raleigh City Council had an unforced error on November 6 when it decided to raise the proposed fee on electric scooter companies such as Bird and Lime by 100%. These companies were paying $150 per scooter to operate within the city limits. Now the council has voted to raise the fee to $300 per scooter. Scooter fees in other cities varies from about $30 to $125. Anything more is above average for sure. But $300? What exactly was the council thinking? Are they trying to get these scooters to leave town? Are they that big of a nuisance in our communities? At our annual Fast 50 Awards event on November 5 at the Raleigh Convention Center, as I was walking in, I saw four people dressed in business suits arrive at the convention center on scooters. Yes, they were all together, so essentially just one group, but they made use of the services. On November 6, driving down Bloodworth in downtown Raleigh, I saw two young men riding the scooter east toward Swain Street. So the city is getting used to these scooters. If Bird, Lime, and others decide to pay the $300 per scooter fee, what business person would assume that the fees will be absorbed by the companies? No, they will just pass it on to the consumers. The current $1 unlock fee and 15 cents per mile cost may well be a $2 unlock fee, and a 30 cents per mile charge. True, the city could generate an additional $300,000 if these companies would agree to such an upcharge. That's because the city will not allow any scooter companies to have more than 500 scooters on the streets. Currently, Bird has 1,300 and Lime has 250. Therefore, had Bird been allowed to operate the 1,300, they could have absorbed the cost with a softer landing. Not anymore. This news from our city council came on a day when media reports surfaced that Amazon has zeroed in on Northern Virginia and a New York City suburb to host its second headquarters, better known as HQ2. Raleigh was a contender, but it looks like we will lose the project. Amazon made it clear during its search process that cities with a robust public transportation grid and dynamic worker mobility features will have an upper hand. So what communities might the company choose? Crystal City, Virginia, one of the busiest metro stations in Arlington County, and Queens, New York, the E-train route, one of the most populous tracks in the New York area subway system. And we can't even decide on whether it's good for a city to have electric scooters on our streets. We are fearful that it will be a safety hazard, and emergency rooms will be filled with patients who are not aware of the proper etiquette of driving an electric scooter. To me, the council's actions does not reflect the values of a progressive city. Let's cut down on these unforced errors. And now we turn to general news from around the state. Report: Amazon will split HQ2 between two cities, written by Lauren Onasorge. 10 months after Amazon announced the Triangle is one of 20 metros under consideration for its second headquarters, a report has surfaced that the massive project could be split between two cities. Citing a person familiar with the matter, the Wall Street Journal reported November 5 that the Seattle e-commerce company, quote, plans to split its headquarters evenly between two locations rather than picking one city for HQ2, unquote. John Boyd, a site selection expert with the Boyd Company in New Jersey, calls the idea ridiculous and says that if it's true, it stands in stark opposition to what Amazon has pitched lawmakers and the real estate community. The company demanded troves of information from finalist regions, and the Triangle complied, with multiple agencies devoting numerous hours to the pitch. If they do this, what a betrayal, Boyd says. I think the company would face enormous backlash. Michael Walden, economist and professor at NC State University, says a split could work to the Triangle's favor, as Northern Virginia is an extremely strong contender. I could see a split HQ2 between Crystal City and the Triangle working well, he theorizes in an email. The locations are not far apart. There are an interstate connection and direct flights, and the Triangle looks good on congestion compared to D.C. According to the Wall Street Journal report, the force behind the decision to build two offices instead of one is recruiting enough tech talent. Splitting the office would also mitigate potential issues with housing and transit, the latter being one of the concerns officials in the Triangle have said could be an issue in North Carolina's pitch for the company. Wall Street Journal, or WSJ, had previously reported that Amazon was having late-stage discussions with Crystal City in Virginia, Dallas, and New York City. Similarly, the Washington Post reported that Amazon is in advanced discussions to establish HQ2 in Crystal City. Boyd says he suspects the Triangle is not out yet, saying he predicts all 20 are in play and that a November surprise could be in order. Amazon's HQ2 proposal calls for 8 million square feet of office space that will employ 50,000 workers. Reporter Catherine Carlock of Boston Business Journal contributed to this story. Top Triangle executives react to the 2018 election. This article written by Lauren Onasorge. Triangle executives flocked to the polls November 6, leaving with stickers, selfies, and optimism. From candidates' positions on climate change, in the case of Organic Transit CEO Rob Cotter, to education, candidates who recognize the importance of workforce training on the local economy, not only for individuals, but for employers, got my vote, says Momentum Learning CEO Jessica Misch. The issues driving their decisions at the polls varied, but the overwhelming majority of executives Triangle Business Journal talked to from either party say that they found the new balance between the now Democratic-led House and Republican-led Senate encouraging. Why they voted. For serial entrepreneur Jason Williams, founder of both FastMed Urgent Care and PRTI, the most important issues that drove my vote were the cost of health care and the cost of energy. For Matt Williamson, co-founder of Windsor Circle, it was fairness and equality for all of our citizens. We're a community, a team, a family, a state, a nation, he says. I voted for candidates and for policies that I felt best drove those forward. Bob Luddy, president of Captive Air, says the need for fiscally conservative leadership drove him to the polls, and he's concerned that the cost to pay off the just-passed school bonds could push up property taxes, impacting everyone in Wake County. That's as Jill Wells Heath, president at Calix Engineers and Consultants, says she's excited the Wake Tech bonds passed. They must have the resources to meet the needs of our growing population, she says. Brian Balberni, CEO of Issuer Direct Corporation, voted for change and a new voice. He believes the House and Senate split will create some balance Wall Street was looking for. And he's not alone. The main principle driving my vote was trying to reestablish the balance of power at both the federal and state levels, says Sally Shuping Russell, managing director of BlackRock Private Equity Partners and chair of Carolina Research Ventures. Shuping Russell also is on the board of trustees at UNC Chapel Hill. The issues. On a state level, the big area of contention appeared to be the 6 proposed constitutional amendments. We don't need to codify such things in the Constitution, says Greg Sandruder, president of Hamilton, Merritt, and Cary. I think such things are better handled legislatively versus an amendment. On November 6, voters approved an amendment that adds an identification requirement to vote in future elections and amendments to expand crime victims' rights and guarantee fishing and hunting in the state. They voted down proposals that would shift powers from the governor to lawmakers on Jones Street when it comes to filling judicial vacancies and limit the governor's ability to appoint state elections board members, but they did approve an amendment that lowers the income tax cap. Lee Roberts, former state budget director under McCrory and current managing partner at Sharpview Capital, says that while he'd rather see the cap calculated differently, he says it has significant benefits. Keep in mind, we already had a cap in the North Carolina Constitution. This just sets it at a lower level. And actual tax rates are below the level in both the old and the new cap, he says. North Carolina voters decisively agreed that the lower cap makes sense, and I concur with them. Heath says she sees arguments for and against the cap, but adds, I personally believe that we must always stay competitive with the states that we compete against in the realm of economic development. We have to remember it's a tax cap, not a tax cut. Now we turn to the small business section, where we read James Lee's column. James Lee is a family business speaker, advisor, and author. The headline, All Family Businesses Must Plan for These Potential Stress Points. From time to time, this column looks at the stress that some family companies experience when they confront the prospect of sudden and significant growth. They face the possibility that growth might overwhelm their management systems, but some senior family business owners also fear that growth will damage the family qualities of their businesses, the characteristics that tie them to the family heritage and value system. Business growth for a family company means changes in priorities, in structure and personnel, and sometimes in the way the business perceives itself. So growth is a major transition point and a major stress point for many family companies. But it's not the only one. Here are some of the other major transitions a family business may face. Market evolution. A well-managed family company can react to change in the marketplace like Muhammad Ali in a boxing ring. Run by family members who share goals and perspectives, the company can make decisions quickly, dodge problems, seize opportunities, and reallocate resources to keep up with change. But still, marketplace shifts such as a sudden economic decline, the appearance of new technologies, or the drying up of demand for products that the company has manufactured since granddad's day can be a shock. For a family business that's been fat, happy, and self-sufficient for a couple of generations, it can be a terrifying transition. New strategy. When its business strategy gets too pooped to perform, as reflected in shrinking market share and profits, the smart family company hires a strategy specialist and gets to work on an update effort. But like growth, a change in the company's direction can require substantial change in how the company operates. Family members who've contributed for years may be left out of touch with a new corporate strategy. They can continue to be valuable to the company, but they may have to accept changes in roles. These factors need to be on the table when a strategy shift is being planned. Marriage or divorce. Expectations of senior owners and other family members can be in for a big surprise if family planning hasn't accounted for the possibility of the marriage or divorce of those in key positions in the company. Divorces, especially, are stressful for all concerned. They can be doubly upsetting if they raise questions of the departing spouse's business ownership rights or the future inheritance of the children of the broken marriage. You can build sensible resolution of such problems into the policies and operating procedures, like prenuptial agreements. However, business policies designed to cushion the shock of divorce are still looked at with a jaundiced eye. Most families, it seems, would rather take their chances in a divorce court. Secession. Transferring the authority and responsibility of ownership and management to the next generation is a profound transition for most family businesses. Those that are ready for it due to effective succession planning get through it with little or no disturbance. Others can suffer acute, even terminal, organizational distress. The best way to weather the succession transition is to plan. Successful succession never happens by accident. Disengagement. The disappointment a family can feel when a child decides not to come into the business is nothing compared to the impact of a family member who has been in the business deciding to leave it. The effect is greatest when the one bowing out is a keystone in the plan for continuity of family ownership. Even the best succession plan can't foresee every chance that someone is going to become distracted or disenchanted. But if it happens, it often generates a significant transition in the lives of the family and the company. That's why a disengagement plan should be on the shelf of every family business in case it's ever needed. Your family business can survive these and other major transitions. In fact, you can even benefit from them, but you've got to have contingency plans on the books and be prepared to act on them. Sports business firm based in Triad announces $52.1 million capital raise. Ben Sutton's Teal Capital Partners, which is focused on sports businesses, has raised $52.1 million in a private equity fund, and the local sports business entrepreneur isn't done yet. Teal Capital raised the money for Teal Growth Fund 1 from 54 investors, according to a recent filing with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Teal Capital made a required initial federal filing recently for our inaugural fund, Teal Growth Fund 1. The first report was based only on an intermediate closing totaling $52.1 million, Sutton says. We anticipate completing a final closing in the next 21 days, and we certainly expect to be fully subscribed, likely exceeding our stated goal of $65 million. The Winston-Salem-based company was founded in 2017 and is managed by Ben Sutton, former chairman and CEO for ISP Sports. And the article goes on to mention the firm's ownership includes Tailgate Guys, Sunshine Beverages, Die Hard Fan Supply, and a merchandising deal for Kentucky Derby winner Justify. And we'll stop right there as we've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Derek Frost, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138.